Good evening, friends and brethren. In the first century,
there were Christians who were scattered through all regions because of the persecution that came after the stoning of Stephen. And as these Christians went different places throughout the world, the gospel was spread. Because these Christians were very active and busy about telling others about Jesus Christ and preaching the word. Acts chapter 11 would tell us, now those who were scattered after the persecution over Stephen traveled as far as Phoenicia and Cyprus and Antioch, preaching the word. That's what Christians do. And that really hasn't changed today. If we are to be the disciples of Christ, then we are the people that need to be busy and active about telling people about Jesus Christ. The text would go on to say that some of them were men from Cyprus and Cyrene who, when they had come to Antioch, spoke to the Hellenists preaching the Lord Jesus. You know, there's always one of two things that will happen at the preaching of Jesus. It doesn't matter where it's at. It doesn't matter who's doing the speaking. One of two things will always happen. There may be some who will respond to it and who will believe and obey. And there will likely be some who will turn away and walk away. But that's the response that will always happen. One of those two things. Now, exactly whose heart is open and who will accept and receive the gospel is not something that I think that we can necessarily determine. In fact, that's not even our place. That's not our role. As Christians, though, we need to be busy about telling people about Jesus Christ, and particularly for those who would be evangelists. The responsibility is that of preaching the Word. It is the Word that has the power to convince and convict. It's not in us, and it's not about us. It's about telling and teaching the Word. God's Word has that power. In the text, we look a little farther, it says, and the hand of the Lord was with them, that is, those who were scattered and those who were teaching Jesus, and a great number believed and turned to the Lord. We rejoice even at the very thought of that. When the news of these things came to the ears of the church in Jerusalem, they sent out Barnabas to go as far as Antioch, and when he came and had seen the grace of God, he was glad, and he encouraged them all that with purpose of heart, they should continue with the Lord. I don't in any way pretend to be Barnabas. And I don't think you've claimed to be the church at Jerusalem. But I appreciate so very much your willingness to help send me out for the purpose of telling people about Jesus Christ and for encouraging those Christians that live in a faraway place. Tonight what I'd like to do is spend some time introducing you to some people that you've had a very important role in helping and encouraging and in different ways. Whenever I make a presentation such as this, I've told Sandra, I said, I never have quite got comfortable with doing a slideshow about a trip. It feels too much like National Geographic. And that's not what my intent is here tonight, is to do a National Geographic presentation. But I have become more and more convinced as I've done this that for us to understand the need of the gospel and helping Christians in other places, we need to know something about the people we're wanting to help. And we need to know something about the people that we're trying to teach and something about the opportunities that are before us. And sometimes to do that, we need to know the people. And so I hope tonight in this presentation that you'll find that to be of benefit, that we spend some time learning some people that you know, at least some of them you will know by name. And you can maybe put a face with those names. Thank you again very much for allowing me to have the opportunity to be a part of this work, for your support. The church at Elkton, where I preach, provided my airfare support to Africa, about $2,000. And the church here at Eastside provided $2,000 in travel expense money. And I appreciate your efforts and your willingness to have that fellowship that way. Here are some pictures and some things that I'd like to show you tonight about various aspects of the work. If we can bring this up to... Am I supposed to do that, Tracy? Oh, there we go. There's some things you work by buttons. There's some things you work by saying, Tracy, I need help. I learned that tonight as we practiced this tonight. There were three primary purposes, at least as I saw it, in making this trip to Africa. This is my second trip to Africa. It was to encourage brethren from a previous trip. I was able to see several brethren that I spent time with last time. Some, in fact, who were converted on the last trip. It was so encouraging to see their faithfulness on this trip. It was to evaluate the brethren that we are supporting. When I say we, I'm speaking particularly for the Elkton Church. We've been helping support some brethren in Zimbabwe for almost 2 years. You're doing the same thing now, as I understand. And that's why we have a common interest in some of the people that we're going to be seeing here. There was a reason of going for the purpose of preaching to brethren and preaching to the lost. And this is just a work full of opportunities. It was a very busy time. I was gone 3 weeks. Part of that, of course, was in travel to and from Africa. And a lot of windshield time in Africa, getting around to different places. And yet there was 26 opportunities to preach, present lessons, and countless opportunities just to sit down with brethren and answer questions and deal with issues that they wanted to talk about. And so the opportunities was just intense, and it was great. There was at least 35 baptized in some of the works that I was involved in. And before my arrival, some others that were already there working, several others had already been baptized. Just wonderful opportunities there. This is a picture of Africa, just to kind of put some things in perspective as we look at this right here. Africa is a very big continent, and it has a lot of different countries. We think of them as states in as we look at the United States, but it's actually a lot of separate countries in it. When I went there, I flew into South Africa to Johannesburg, and then flew up to Zimbabwe, to Bulawayo. This is Zimbabwe right here. And that's where we concentrated our time. Looking just at Zimbabwe, most of our time was spent here in this western to central part of Zimbabwe. It's on right now. Is it not working? Is the battery weak? Maybe? Well, I'm all wrapped up in this thing. Sorry. Just don't get it around my neck. Let me stand over on this side. Some of the main places that we spend some time, and some of the places that that you'll see tonight are like right over here around Chivi. Right here's Bulawayo, where I flew into. Meeting there was Sandy and Patty and Sandy Kindleball. Some of you know them. Now Patty is from Zimbabwe or South Africa, and spent a lot of time in Zimbabwe growing up. And Sandy is an American, but they have lived in the country a lot. They live in Decatur, Alabama right now. When I flew in, they met me at Bulawayo, and we went directly out to Chivi, which is an area over here near Shabani and Mazvingo, right over here. You'll see some pictures of that. We spent a lot of time around, several days around Hoko Plains, which is up here in this area here near Guru, and then on up to Mangwani, which was real close to Guru, right in here. And then we spent 3 days in a meeting at Sapila, which was back over this way, about 2.5 hours on Tar Road from Bulawayo, and then about 2.5 hours from the west side of the moon is about the best way I can describe it. I mean, we weren't close to nothing. And yet when we got there, there sure were a lot of brethren waiting for us to get there. It was just amazing to me. And so that's some of the things I want to share with you tonight. I'll tell you that I've got absolutely more than I can share with you in one sitting, or at least longer than you would want to sit. But I'm going to try to show you some things that I hope will be of interest to you. This is Bulawayo International Airport, the Quonset Hut, where we flew in, and where Patty and Sandy Kindleball met me, and we just took up. Well, he hooks on everything. Y'all have service here. I actually have to hook it on myself at Elkton, you know. Is it working better now? Okay. And so when I got to Bulawayo, and they picked me up at the airport. We walked outside and got in the truck. And we took right off out to the bush and drove about 2.5 hours to get out to this little village of Chivi. Now, this is a new church that's been established here. There were about 10 or 12 members. And, you know, it's interesting. You go from one village to another. Some places are a little more organized than others. This was not very organized. And, in fact, it seemed to be a village that was rather poor. There's differences that way, too. Some villages are a little bit nicer, and people seem to have a little bit more. Now, when I say they have more, we take that in relative terms, understand? More by their standards. But things were rough here, is just the best way to say it. So as we pulled up, there were brethren and some other folks from the village there waiting on us when we got there. The fire was going. There's always a fire somewhere in camp. There's always a fire going, and this was right by where we were preaching at. And so we got busy about setting up camp, because we're camping in the bush. There's no Motel 6 out there anywhere. And we got ready. By 7:30, we started preaching. And we were thinking that we're just going to preach for a little while in the evening, and we'd quit about 10 o'clock, which was good for me, because This was 10 o'clock on Friday night, and I'd left home very early on Wednesday morning, and I was a little bit on the tired side. And so I was thinking, boy, tonight's going to be a good night. I'm going to sleep some tonight. And so we got started about 7 or 7:30. This is Professor Mashako is his name. I met him a couple of years ago in Bulawayo. He was at the Hillside Church. And I remember meeting him as his name was Professor. I can remember his last name. And I remember asking him, well, Professor, what is it exactly that you teach? And he looked at me real funny and finally said, teach? No, I don't teach. I'm a police officer. I said, oh, well, just Professor. And he says, oh, that's just my name. So that's his name, Professor. He doesn't teach anything except now he teaches the gospel. He stopped being a police officer because to be a police officer in Zimbabwe requires you to do some things that Christians just really can't do, honestly. And so he quit that. And one of the things that he has done is gone back to his rural home and has been teaching and has converted several people there and looks that there may be some opportunity for several more to be taught. And we're hoping that that'll be the case. This was the next morning there in camp. Our sleep wasn't quite what we expected it to be that night. We got done about 11:30 that night. There was a lot of questions, and they didn't want to quit. So we didn't want to quit either. But when we did quit and went to bed, all of us slept a couple or 3 hours, and that was about it. And some of the hoodlums of the village invaded our campfire there and stayed the whole night making noise, and we couldn't get them to be quiet. So there wasn't a good night of sleep there either. But the next day, I got up to find some of the villagers there cooking some corn. This is actually a good sight, because last year there was no corn to be found. But they were fixing some corn on the fire, and this was their breakfast. Can I say something about Patty Kendallbaugh? I've got to know Patty a little bit over the last couple of years, some different studies that we've been together at. And I've thought a lot of Patty. And I think so much more of him now, having spent 3 weeks together with him and a lot of interesting circumstances. Patty Kendallbaugh is a preacher in every good sense. And he's a missionary, one who's willing to go wherever there is a need and is willing to live in just, at times, very difficult circumstances for a long period of time. And he's a servant more than anything, I guess you would say. You know, he's a good man. And I use that term very carefully because I think sometimes it's something that can be overused. But it's not overused with Patty. This is that next day there in Chibi, some of the preaching that was done in the village. Different ones, of course, interpret, because in the village it's always in a different language. And from village to village, the language changes, though it all sounds unfamiliar to me. But there's always someone that will have to interpret for you. So for preaching, that means that you have to be careful about how long you're going to preach, because a 30-minute sermon is going to be an hour by the time it goes through most interpreters. And so you have to kind of judge that a little bit and make adjustments as you go along when you're preaching with an interpreter. This is just some of the folks that were there that day. And then we're on the road as we are heading on to the next stop. There's a very important thing that you do in Bulawayo or in Zimbabwe. I learned this last trip. You always carry extra petrol. You carry extra fuel because you don't find a gas station just everywhere. And a lot of times when you pull in to try to get some petrol, they don't have any. I mean, about half of the time on this trip, you pull into a gas station or a petrol station, they have none. Or they'll limit you to 10 liters, which is not very much. And so we carry 20 liters with us all the time, which came in very handy at this point. And I learned after this episode that I was going to pack the trailer from now on, because the gas was put all the way from the front of the trailer. And since Patty is several years older than me, that means I'm the one that has to go up in there and get it out of the trailer. So from here on out, I said, Patty, I'll pack the petrol. And it went right on the back so I could get it if we needed it again. This is the way many people get around in Zimbabwe, our brethren, of course, included. Most people don't have cars. Hardly anybody has their own car. And so you travel by bus. This would be the same thing for some of the preachers that some churches help support over there, and they go from one village to another if it's very far. They're probably going by bus. And if you had to go anywhere of any distance, you'd go by bus. Well, the buses do this a lot. They stop because they're broke down. And you see this along the road all over the place. We went by one place, and I couldn't believe this. A bus was on the side of the road, and the engine block was sitting out in front of it and on the side of the road. They were rebuilding the engine on the side of the road. There's no tow trucks to take the bus anywhere, and so you work on it where it's broke. And even the buses that are going look a lot like this one here, going down the road crooked and lopsided. That's just the state of repair that many of them are in.
And to look at the buses, you would have to try to imagine that they're not very comfortable to ride in. Because if the bus will hold 45 or is made for 45 passengers, you can be guaranteed there's 60 or 70 in the bus. That's just the way that it's done. It's not unusual to see people sitting alongside the road, and you can even imagine that there are those who are our brethren who would sit along the side of the road like this, and in this case, they're selling sugar cane. It was the time of year where the sugar cane was ready. Or they're selling pumpkins or watermelons or something like that. And if they hit those who do have vehicles, just like the buses, they break down a lot. In fact, the vehicles that we were using, what actually changed the plans of our trip on the last 3 days is our truck was broke down too. The roads are brutal. And what you're seeing in these pictures here, this is like the interstate highway right here. Most of what you drive on is not like this at all. And the roads, once you get off the main tar road, as they call it, the roads are just absolutely brutal. This man right here is Newman Gumpel. You may have heard of him. Because for those who are sending boxes and packages to the Queen's Park Church in Bulawayo, Newman Gumpel is the man that picks up those boxes at the post office. Newman is a preacher. And he preaches at the Queen's Park Church and at the Kensington Church and at many other churches. Newman Gumpel is a preacher. And Newman Gumpel is a servant in so many ways. Newman supported himself by driving a truck for many years, but he quit that a few years ago so he could devote more time to preaching. And he is, in all accounts, all that I can see, just absolutely a good man. When we stopped by his house and I got out of the truck, Patty said, as Newman came around the house, Patty said, "Newman, this is Joe Greer." And I thought he was going to fall over himself trying to get over to me. "Joe Greer! Joe Greer! Elkton Church of Christ! Joe Greer! Joe Greer! Elkton Church of Christ!" And he took my hand and he pumped it like he thought he was going to get water out of me like a well. And just kept going, "Thank you, thank you, thank you to the brethren at Elkton Church of Christ." Because that's how he recognizes my name. Now, he may recognize some other names here the exact same way. Because he's the one that, as I said, goes to the post office and gets those boxes of relief that you're sending to the brethren at Queen's Park. And he was just so excited to be able to say, "Please tell all of the Christians in the United States," as though I know all of the Christians in the United States, "please tell them all, thank you so much for all of their good help." This is where Newman and Lily, his wife, live. It's just outside of Bulawayo, little ways. It's a house that, and one day was in much better state of repair, like all of Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe used to be just a beautiful country. A well-governed, well-fed. In fact, it was a country that fed all the countries around. And now there are places like at Newman's house where he hasn't had electricity in 6 months. And is building a little kitchen outside of his house and back, a stone kitchen, because they cook with fire now. Wood stove, that's how they cook. This is his garden in back of his house. And this is the Queen's Park Church, our church building, I should say. When Patty and Sandy saw the building, they kind of went, "Oh, look at that." Because this isn't how it always looked. One day, everything, as we said, in Zimbabwe is in much better state of repair than this. It's certainly adequate, and it does what it needs to do. It provides a place for the Christians to assemble together and to meet. But there was a day, not that many years ago, where it looked much different than that. It looked much better, where things were in better state of repair. Understand, there is no wasted space. If there is dirt that'll grow, like around the church building at Queen's Park, the Christians are putting that to work. And from everything that I can see, they are doing what they can to meet and satisfy their own needs. Last year, they couldn't have grown anything like this. There was such a lack of rain. There was lack of seeds. They couldn't even get seeds to plant had it rained. But there are some signs of improvements in many ways. And these brethren, from what I can see, are not opposed or afraid of working to try to help provide for themselves if there's an opportunity to do that at all. And this is the church at Queen's Park. And these are some of the brethren that you're helping. And when I got there, they were already there, which is almost always the case wherever you went.
If you're supposed to meet at 10 o'clock, they're there early. And they're waiting on your arrival. And almost always when you get there and you walk in, they're singing. They do that a lot. They like to sing. And we walked in, and it was the same type of response Newman Gumpo said as he walked in. He says, "Brethren, this is Joe Greer." And there was a hush, kind of a noise like that. And everybody turned around, and I felt really uncomfortable. But they were so excited. They didn't get up and say anything then, because they would have certainly thought that to be inappropriate to do that. But we had opportunity to visit after a while. I preached there that morning. Two lessons. Newman translated for one. He's a really good translator. And then preached a second lesson. One of the young men there translated, and again, did a very good job. These here are some of the brethren that the Elkton Church is sending relief to. And it is so good to put, you know, a face with the names. And especially like Biki Mapofo right here. My first words to him when he introduced himself, I said, "Biki, you're not a woman." And he looked at me kind of funny, and I tried to explain. "We thought you were a woman. We did not know." Just like Orlean Nubi is a woman, and we thought Orlean was a man. It's just kind of nice to kind of know something about the people that we're sending relief to at Elkton, as well as we're sending to relief to some of the Christians at Kensington as well. And then these are some of the brethren right here that you are sending support to here. And I tried to get them to line up in order. And I think I've got their names all right. And this is loaded on your computer in back. Maybe you can get this and print it off, and you can hang this up on a wall somewhere. And when you're packing boxes for these people, you can know who they are. These brethren, as we had opportunity to talk some after services, were so very grateful and so very thankful for what you're doing. I wish that I could put into words, with the same emotion that they showed, their appreciation for what you're doing. Time and again, I would have different ones would come up and say, "Please understand, you saved my life. We were hungry, we were starving, we had no food. We kept praying, what should we do?" And then boxes started coming. And it took me a while to prepare myself on how to respond to that. My first response would be when someone would say, "You saved my life." "Oh, no, no, no. This is God's plan. God spared your life. This is the way Christians take care of Christians." And I'm sure you've had opportunity, even as you've thought about and planned to send relief to Christians in Bulawayo. What a teachable opportunity that provided for you, just as it has for us at Elkton. And not just for those who are older, but and if you haven't done this, you need to do this. It's the opportunity for us to teach these younger people here who maybe haven't been in a situation to help Christians before to understand God's pattern on how Christians take care of Christians. And to know and understand that it works. God's way is always right. It's always best. And it works. And these brethren far away are very grateful for what you've done. This is Gumpo, which his name is Newman Gumpo. Everybody just calls him Gumpo. He likes us to be called Gumpo. And this is the young man that did some translating. And just, even the young man, when he was kind of closing out the services, again, just thank you for the food. Thank you for the letters. Perhaps you've put some letters or notes in the boxes you've sent. If you haven't done that, what a wonderful opportunity. You don't have to write a novel. Just a note that says, "We saw your picture. We know who you are now." Just a note that says, "We're praying for you. We hope things get better for you." A note that says, "Don't let Satan take your faith away." Just a note that says something like that means so much. So many comments about that. Even I had a couple of folks that Elkton sends boxes to that remembered names of Christians at Elkton that have written a note and put in a box. They remembered the names of people that sent them a note that means something to them. It's a lesson for us to learn. They were thankful for clothes. Some have sent clothes along the way in books and Bibles. Just so very grateful for these things. It was interesting when services was over. And they all got up, and as they were walking out of the building, they started singing a song. And they sung their way out of the building all the way outside. And as they lined up on the outside, and they didn't stop singing until everybody came out. And there, that is where they greeted one another and spent some time talking with one another. There was only one vehicle in the parking lot, and that's Newman's truck. And after he came out, he said, "I have some boxes for some of you." And delivered the boxes to some that were there. This man right here came up to me, and we had sent some shirts over and some blouses and some boxes. You know, he came up to me and he says, "Do you have any more shirts?" And I said, "Well, not with me, but I'll see what we can do to get you a shirt." And so now, this man needs no more shirts. I said this at Elkton. He needs no more shirts. But if you have some extra clothes that you would want to send, you know, there are brethren there that could probably use some clothes. And so that's something for you to think about too. Outside, Newman starts delivering some of these boxes. I wanted you to see these boxes, what they look like. The state of repair or disrepair that they get there in. Let me say something about Newman again. Gumpo is a worker and has been so busy with trying to take care of the needs of the brethren, delivering boxes, not just to Queen's Park and Kensington, but churches just all around. And mealy meal. Mealy meal is like the corn meal that they make Patty calls it a porridge out of. I call it paste, and it tastes about like paste to me. But it's the staple of their diet. And he and Big Boy Doobie and a couple of other brethren have delivered ton upon ton of mealy meal to brethren. He is a real worker. Here's what these boxes look like after they leave us. They're pretty banged up and beat up. Some of them look worse than this. Some of them just barely make it there at all. And what we've started doing is we run some shipping tape all the way around the outside of it now, hoping that maybe that'll kind of help hold them together a little bit better. And here's a box that you all seen. It was sitting at my feet. I took a picture of it, Eastside Church of Christ, to one of the Sabandas. And this is what the box looked like when it got there. And so, to answer the question that I got as soon as I got back, did our boxes get there? Well, yes, they're getting there. Newman, as I said, is such a worker. He's 74 years old. He doesn't look like it, but he's 74 years old. This is the next place we went to. On this particular Sunday, it was a 5-sermon day. Got a workout on this day. Had no problem sleeping this night. And this is the Kensington Church building. This is outside of town, about 10 kilometers or so. And it's on the edge of Newman Gumpo's property, and I guess he provided a building here for a church that was started just about 3 years ago. The number's about 80 now. It's a good sized group. And when we got there, they were already singing, and I was scheduled to preach when we got there, and I walked out. I wear a backpack a lot when I'm traveling different places. I carry my Bibles and outlines and a few things in. And as I walk in the door, working out of my backpack, and a fellow there says, "Old man, sit down." I turned around and then realized he was talking to me. "Old man, sit down." But let me explain, that's not a derogatory phrase as it is sometimes used here. Because there is very distinctively respect that is given to those who are older. And admittedly, I have come to a point of being a little bit older than many. And so for someone to say "old man," it's like saying, it is like saying, with respect and honor, "Please, would you sit here?" And certainly, if old man walked into a building and these young men were sitting right here and there was no place else to sit, these young men, certainly one of them, better stand up and say, "Old man, sit here." Because that would be the respectful thing to do. You know, there's something we can learn from that. I think somehow, sometimes, in some places, we've missed that. And it goes on beyond that, really. There's some things that maybe we can see as we go forward if we have time. But preached here at Kensington, it was a very good group. And in fact, on that back, let me say that very often you have the ladies on one side and the men that sit on the other. It wasn't quite just that way here. But in the back corner where I was told to sit was certainly where the older men were sitting. And again, it's one of those statements of respect. And you would not just arbitrarily go and sit in the old man's corner. You must be invited to be there. It's like passage, perhaps, and recognize that there is honor to be given. This is the church at Kensington. And some of the young people said, all the young people were sitting right up front. I just enjoyed that so much. This was my translator. And here's all the young people on the other side. A number of the small children that sat right up in front for a pretty long time and were so good and so quiet. There'd been some good training that had been done there. These are some folks, it's not a very good photo, some folks that Elkton is sending to. It's a brother and sister. They've lost both of their parents. Can I explain something about that? You see, the death rate is very high in Zimbabwe. You know, the average life expectancy of a man is somewhere around 30 years old. A woman is just slightly above that. There's a great problem with HIV and AIDS. I don't know, nobody said. In fact, it's not talked about so much, but I would not be surprised if their parents died because of AIDS. In so many places and villages you go to preach, there is many more women than there are men. Because in many cases, the men have gone to the city or have gone to South Africa to try to find some work. There's just not much to find in the way of work in Zimbabwe. And the problem with that is sometimes they're gone for a very long time, for months at a time, maybe a year at a time. And what happens? Sometimes his inhibitions are lowered over time. And, we just say it this way, sin happens. And there are relationships, sexual relationships that take place that should not happen and should not take place. And this is just part of the problem with AIDS throughout Africa. And then the disease is brought back home. And this has happened among Christians too. In many cases, it's those who have become Christians who had contracted disease before they became Christians. But even among Christians, there's problems with sexual immorality. There's some stories I'd love to tell you about some of the issues they deal with. That's going to have to wait to a different time. But you know, my basic response to so many of the issues they deal with as we talked about different issues was that, you know, it's no different at home. They deal with some of the same temptations and same issues that we do. Everything is different, and then on the other hand, everything's the same, isn't it? And Satan works through different avenues, but tempts us in the same way no matter where we are. We can't let him win. Here are some other folks that Elkton helps to support at Kensington. Fred Savanda. This guy was interesting. I was outside and he come up to me. He says, "Do you know Jeff Archer?" And I said, "Well, yes, I do." He says, "Take my picture. Take my picture," in very broken English. So I took his picture. He says, "Can you please show this picture to Jeff Archer? And then he will know who I am." And Jeff has sent him some books to study and things like that. And so please show Jeff Archer who I am. This is the Hillside Church building. This is in Bulawayo. This is sermon number 5 for Sunday. It preached in the dark because, as is not uncommon in Zimbabwe, even in the cities in Bulawayo, there was no electricity this night. Or in fact, the next Sunday night we came back into town and I preached again. With no electricity, no lights. I want to show you something that may be surprising. It was surprising to us because we have seen pictures and we've heard stories about the stores in Zimbabwe that have no food on the shelves. And truly, it was that way for a very long time, you know, for a better part of 2 years. But some things have changed very quickly in the last few months, or the last 2 months or so in Zimbabwe. Their dollar has completely gone away. There is no more the Zimbabwe dollar. It's worthless. If you had money in the bank, you don't know more. It just happened overnight. The inflation didn't happen overnight. That was a process of going on for some time. When I was there 2 years ago, we changed over money for no more than 3 days at a time because inflation, it would start losing its value over 2 or 3 days. It got so bad where in Zimbabwe that if you had $1 million to buy a quart of milk, you better buy it this morning because this afternoon you couldn't buy a quart of milk for $1 million. It would cost $2 million. I'm not exaggerating. That's how bad the inflation was. And that's the type of money they use. In fact, I have at home some $50 trillion Zimbabwe dollars. that are worth absolutely nothing. But what's happened in the last 2 months or so is they've gone to totally foreign exchange money. I didn't buy anything in Zimbabwe except with U.S. dollars. U.S. dollar means something there. South African rand you can use. Botswana pula you can use. And what this has allowed merchants to do is to go to Botswana, to go to South Africa, and buy food to put in their stores. Most stores we went into had a lot of food in it. Now, there wasn't necessarily a lot of folks there buying the food, because if you have no money, it doesn't matter how much food is on the shelves. And the food, prices. I mean, what about the prices? Well, it's put up here in R, that's rand, South African rand. A small bag of chips in U.S. dollar would be about $2 for a small bag of chips. We send some little packets similar to this to mix with their rice and stuff like that. You tear them open, just pour out some stuff, some gravy type stuff, and we pay about $1 for them. And then see, this would be about $3.50 is what it costs for them over there. That's some cookies or biscuits. I took pictures of that so I could remember how good they were. And mayonnaise, a jar of mayonnaise about that big would be about $6 or $6.50 U.S. You know, pretty expensive. A small jar of peanut butter would be about $3.50 U.S. And so there's food right now in the shelves. But most of them would not be able to buy that. Here's rice. A small, about a 2-pound bag of rice would be about $5. And we pay $1.50 or something like that is what we would pay. So there's food on the shelves. And so we were asking, Sandy and Patty were asking, and Les and Linda Maydell, some of you may know, we were asking, okay, what should we be doing? Asking Gumpo and some of these men that are over there, should we keep sending boxes? And Gumpo thought about that a while, and he says, I am hoping that there will come a time where you don't have to send boxes anymore. But I'm afraid, he's a very animated man. He goes like this a lot. I am afraid for you to stop sending boxes. Because what if in 2 months there is no more food on the shelves? And we say to you, please, can you help? And it takes 2 more months for the boxes to come to us. It's a very long time. And so I think we're kind of the mind right now that we need to keep sending boxes. Because we don't know if that's going to stay that way right now. Over a little bit of time, we'll know. And the other problem is, the shelves are packed. Most of the brethren that we're helping don't have the money to buy anything at the store. So the situation hasn't really changed for them. Will their economy get better? Will there be jobs in the future? Well, we hope so. This is waiting in line for petrol. Common scene. This is heading back off the road again, back out to the bush. I'll show you just Zimbabwe is a beautiful country. Africa is a beautiful country. And yet so much of it is clouded by the poverty and the political differences that they have there and they deal with. This is another one of those roads that seems to lead to the backside of the moon. And you drive for a long way and you just, over the rise, you come to a village. And as you pull in, people come running out of the huts and they come to greet you and they are so excited knowing that you're coming. Knowing that you are coming to teach them. And they're ready for you to, they're ready for, absolutely for you to be there and to talk and to teach them. This man right here is Enoch Nubi. I'll say a little bit more about him as we go forward. But this was an interesting meeting right here of Enoch and Patty. They have been fast friends for many, many years. When Patty became a Christian when he was 16 years old, Enoch was 26, and he was working with Foy Short at the time in Bulawayo. Enoch is a fascinating man. He's very smart. He's a good preacher. He's a wonderful translator, a wonderful servant in just every way. I was going to take some pictures of these flowers before I could get situated, as often happens. Take my picture, and someone else saying, me first, and you turn around and here's more. You know, they want their picture made. This is the village of Hoko. We spent a couple of days here preaching. It's Enoch's village. And this is one of those villages that was very well organized. not just as far as it being clean and looking nice, but they were just organized about the way they went about doing things. Particularly when it came time for us to get together to study or for a period of worship. It was obviously something that was not foreign to them. And they understood the significance of what was going on. As we got there, there was already some setting around where the church meets, ready for our arrival and ready for teaching to take place. This is out in the cornfield. This is the toilet. I was excited because not every village has one. And you have to think about those things from time to time. Understand how our brethren live in other places. You know, we take so much for granted. And sometimes you have to go someplace far away to take a toilet for granted, even if a toilet is nothing more than four walls. You have to appreciate what is there. These are just some pictures around in the village. And this is the preaching that takes place. We had split up classes for a while. I was teaching this class here on the role of men in the home and leadership in the home. Enoch had said when I got there, often you don't know what you're going to speak on until you get there. Boy, I'm not good at that. I like to know ahead of time. And so that's why I carry my backpack with some supplies in it and some ideas. Enoch said, and I'd already kind of learned this, we are having a real problem in our homes. Men who are not willing to be men. Men who are not taking the leadership responsibilities that they should have as husbands and fathers in the home. And I said, don't say. You know, we got the same problem at home. You know, it's not any different here, is it? And there needs to be some teaching done about men being men and leading the home and what that means. And so that was our first session together, was doing that. And was it windy, as it often is in many places, kind of out in the open and sandy. I'm still rubbing the sand out of my Bible. I think it's still coming out of my hair sometimes. Is it everywhere? It's just everywhere all the time. Enoch Newby, what a tireless servant. Can I say something more just about him? 79 years old, and just like the Energizer Bunny, just keeps going and going and going. And a wonderful translator to work with. Enoch does whatever you do. And if you're standing up and you're making a point just like this, when Enoch translates, he does just like you did, just like this. And if you emphasize something like this, Enoch is going to emphasize it the same way. And I really like that. Because you know what's going on. And if you're trying to really get a point across, he is too. And he does such a wonderful job in doing that. This is Adam Kimball, Patty and Sandy's son. Adam preaches in Noonan, Georgia, and joined us a couple days after I got there. And was always introduced by Patty as, this is my firstborn son, to which everybody would go, oh, because that meant something to them, just like it did in biblical times, that this was the firstborn son, well, the only son, actually, of Patty and Sandy. And you notice the seats that are setting up here behind where the preaching is being done. It was almost always like that. I didn't find this to be a comfortable thing. But they had whatever the best seats would be, and it may just be a wood bench. But you would get to sit on that. And that's where they would put you, right in front of everybody. And that's where you would sit while others were doing the preaching until your turn came about. This is Sandy Kindleball. It's kind of hard to see. I hope you can see it better than I can from here. She's back inside this hut, and she's teaching the women. And what she's teaching about many times in this situation is the role of women. And what women can do in the home, their responsibility with their children, their responsibility to their husband, their responsibility to the Lord. And that was some of the things that she was talking about and teaching on. She is such a compassionate woman. And literally would just be in tears in some places looking at the circumstances that some of our brethren are living in. And would be absolutely embarrassed to death to know that I've said this much about her. But what a good woman. These are just some of the children in the village. All of them want their picture made. And the group grows every time you turn around. And then if you offer to show them the picture, as Adam did right here, he's holding it up in the shade of the hut. The group grew and grew and grew till they could all, one by one, come by and look at the digital camera, see the picture on the camera right there. And finally, when he got all done, he came by and says, "Whew, I won't do that again." You try to show it to one, you got to show the whole village the pictures that you've made. This is Enoch's wife watching over the preparation of the food inside the hut. I want to tell you something about this right here. We talked a little bit already about old man and the respect that is shown from the younger to the older. I think we can learn something from this. I mean, really, it's a biblical principle, you know, of the respect that younger people are to show to older. And certainly in Enoch's village, it was very much this way. You could see the teaching of Enoch every place you turned around in this regard. When it came time to eat, you know, it would very often be the younger ladies or younger girls that would come and serve us. The old men would get served first. There's advantages to having gray hair. If you're really hungry, you're going to get to eat first, is one thing. But if you're the visitor there, if you're the visiting preacher that's there, then that means that you're going to actually be the first of the first. That's kind of embarrassing too, but there's no need to try to change that. You just kind of go along with the customs that they have. And so if you're standing up, these young ladies are going to come up to you with this plate of food, and they're going to come up and they're going to kind of bow, and they're going to hand you that food. And if you're sitting down when they bring you that food, they're going to walk up and they're going to do like this. They're not going to look you in the face. They're just going to hand you this food. And then they'll back away. It's a means of respect. And they're demonstrating their respect for you. And so when it came time to eat, never were the young people in line for food first. Never. I mean, it just didn't happen. I'm not sure what would happen if one of the young kids tried to do that. But I don't think it would be good. You know, because the older people were, it was in descending order. The men first, then the women by age, and then the young people would eat. It's all a part of respect. I think we can learn something from that. And this is eating with our brethren. You know, the mealy meal we talked about before, and I wanted you to see this and understand what our brethren eat. This mealy meal, it's a corn meal, and it's made up like a porridge, as Patty would say. Like I said, it's like paste to me. It doesn't really have much of anything in the way of flavor. And it is filling, which is why they like it. Because if you're hungry, it does help to cover the hunger. But it doesn't taste like much. Now, this is a good meal. All of our meals didn't look like this. Sometimes you just had sudza. It may be a little piece of meat on the side. This is sudza. And a little bit of goat, and a spoon of some beans, and some green stuff. I don't know what the green stuff is. You know, but if you mixed it with the sudza, it was okay. Now, Mama Rick gets upset because I won't eat her squash. And I told her, I'm not going to eat that squash. I don't have to. You can't make me. And I've said, if I get hungry enough, I can eat that squash. If you're hungry enough, you can eat the green stuff. I still don't know what it is. It's not cabbage, I don't think. And it didn't look like spinach. But it added some flavor to the paste, or to the sudza. And you eat it all with your fingers, with your hands. And that's not considered to be ugly in any way. And what they do, the sudza is kind of thick. And you take it and you kind of roll it up in a ball in your hand. And you just pop it in your mouth. That's how they eat that. I never quite got that down too good, and I had it all over my beard and everything else. But that just did the best I could and wiped off what I could. And you went on when you were done. And if you couldn't quite finish what was on your plate, and they always put a lot on our plate, it seemed like more on ours than on everybody else's, you know, and I wasn't sure what to do, Patty said, just hold your plate and somebody will get it. And sure enough, in time, one of the little girls would come by and bow and take your plate. And I said, where's it going? He says, don't worry, it's not wasted. I said, I'm sure it's not. Somebody was going to eat what you didn't finish up. That's just what you do. And so this is a closer picture of the sudza and the goat and the beans and the green stuff, whatever it was. Here's our camp in Holco. It's always very hard to sleep in the bush, in the village, because there was always something going on, no matter where we were at. There was some noise going on all night. Somebody was washing dishes all night. I don't know how there could have possibly been that many dishes. But every time I got woke up, there was pots and pans banging around, or they were cooking something, or they were sweeping. This is in the morning, and you can see that the dirt out here has been swept. They swept. Somebody swept the whole village, and it happened between 2 and 3 in the morning because I heard it. But they swept the whole village. And so the dirt was very neatly manicured when we got up in the morning, and where we had more opportunities to teach and to preach again. These are just some pictures very early in the morning around Hoko. I want you to see this picture, this corn. The seed that grew this corn was provided by brethren, by Christians who sent money to Les Maydell, and he was able to purchase seed that was given to the Christians. Because the Christians very much so want to do their work. They want to grow food. They want to provide for themselves as they can. And in this part of the country, in Hoko, they had very good crops. In the north, in Binga, we've just recently received a letter from Peter Munduna, who's a preacher up around Binga, who wrote a letter to Patty Kindleball that said, "Please tell the brethren thank you, but they no longer have to send boxes to us. Our crops will sustain us through next year." And so that's just wonderful news. It's not like that everywhere in Zim. On the southern part, they didn't have the rains that they did in the north. And in one village, they had some problem with elephants that just destroyed the whole crop. But this year is, again, the effort of good brethren here in the States. Now, this was a good morning. Sandy fixed us some breakfast. Had a hard-boiled egg, a bowl of oatmeal, a protein bar, and a cup of tea, and no sudsa. It was a good morning. This little boy was ready now, let me tell you. This is Enoch's grandson. And he stood like this a lot. And he made you feel like maybe you weren't doing something right, because he watched everything you did. And he'd run off and play for a minute and come back and just stand there and watch you like he was in charge. And this is what I wanted to get to and what I wanted to tell you about. This is there at Hoko still. And right outside Little Father, where we were preaching for 2 days, there's this little building, you know, back here and back. And Adam Kindleball and I walked back there with Enoch. We were looking at that, and we said, "Well, what exactly is this little building right here?" It was kind of divided in half inside, built out of brick. And he says, "This is where we can store our meal. When our crops come in, we'll grind it up and make meal. And we can store it." He was explaining how the mice and rats can't get into it and how they can seal it off in the middle and different things like that. And so Enoch said to us, he says, "You know, we're not sure yet, but our crops look good. We'll know soon." And he says, "What we're hoping and what I've been telling the brethren here is that we have to make preparations. If we have been so blessed this year to have extra, then we have to be ready and make preparations to take care of the poor brethren." Adam and I looked at each other and we couldn't say a thing. I mean, here these brethren have been receiving aid. Eastside hasn't been sending here, but other churches have sent to the brethren there because they had no food a few months ago. And there have been lessons taught there about here's God's plan about how brethren take care of brethren. Acts chapter 4 tells us about that. Acts chapter 2. Tells us about God's plan, how Christians take care of Christians. And now, as things are looking a little better for them, they're making plans on how they can take care of poor brethren in other parts of the country. It tore me up. In a good way. That was a wonderful thing. I've gone way over time. I'm going to just go through some photos real fast here, some things I want you to see. All villages don't look quite as organized as Enoch's was. This is a very nice-looking village. This is at Megwandi. There was about 70 that gathered there from 3 different villages, 3 different churches that came together. And there were 70 present. There were 17 baptized in this effort here, which was just amazing. And not just because we were there preaching that day. There had been preaching already taking place there. But it all kind of came together that day is what happened. That's Adam preaching there. And it is our little break for tea. In the headman's house right there. Here's the kitchen in the village. And Enoch's granddaughter, and they have a new baby. And the men lined up for their sudsa and getting ready to eat. 2 veteran workers, 2 preachers working side by side. Tracy, we can set that down. There are so many more stories. These are just a few. I wanted you to know and understand some things about our brethren at Queen's Park. Those that you've been involved with sending relief to. I want you to know something about them. And now you've got a picture with a name attached to it so you can maybe feel a little bit closer to some of those brethren. I want you to understand some things about the circumstances that brethren live in there.
And I hope you find that to be very helpful to you in some ways. In a lot of places around the world, when a lesson is presented, preaching has been done, you come to the end of the lesson and the preacher will simply say, "Thank you for listening." And we'll go take a seat. We don't usually do it that way here. We could, and it would work just fine. If someone then got up and said, "We're going to invite anyone tonight who needs to respond to the gospel, please, to stand up right now." That's how it's done in some places. Or in some places, some villages, even, you come to an end of a lesson and you would say, "Thank you for listening," and sit down. And maybe Enoch would stand up and he would say some things and have everybody stand up and they would sing a song. And at the end of the song, he would say to them, "You know, there may be some who need to become Christians," and he would talk about that. Or he would say, "Maybe there are some who are Christians but have fallen back into sin. You need to stop sinning. You need to come back. Repent. Pray forgiveness. If you need the prayers of the brethren, or if you need to become a Christian, I want you to stay standing and everybody else sit down." That's how it's done in some places. And you might look over a crowd and you see somebody standing up and you rejoice. But what we're doing tonight is we're going to sing a song. And our reason for singing this next song is to give an opportunity for anyone tonight who is not a Christian, who is not a baptized believer, but is ready to become one. Someone who believes that Jesus is the Son of God, ready to repent of your sins, confess your faith in Jesus Christ, and be baptized for remission of sins. If you're ready to do that tonight, we want you to respond. And we're going to sing this song, during which we're inviting you to come forward and have a seat here in the front somewhere, and we'll see to your names. If you need to respond to the gospel, will you come now as we stand and sing?